This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Female Gaze Podcast. I'm Jessie Katz.
I just said my name really weird.
I got a lisp on my own. Do you ever say your name and you're like, that doesn't sound like my name at all?
It's like looking in the mirror, you're like, who am I?
Yeah. Right. They say that if you saw yourself in real life, you wouldn't recognize yourself, right? Whoa. That's like a thing that people say.
Are we not seeing ourselves in real life?
No.
Only
no, like if you were cloned or something. Oh, yeah. If you could somehow see yourself, you wouldn't recognize what you're looking at.
Well, because everyone makes such a weird face in the mirror.
Totally.
You know, yeah, like that's face. Not, if you ever watch someone like take out their phone, they like make the most gorgeous face you've ever seen. And that's what they think they look like.
Mine's like pouty lips, weird.
Yeah. I went to a stand-up set the other night with someone who was talking about how she took, I think she took a picture of her vagina once to like see what was up. And she didn't realize that her face was in the background of the picture. And that was the most horrifying part of looking at that picture, was not her vagina, which was cool, but seeing her like dead-eyed face in the background, not realizing that it was in the picture. That was so relatable to
that's
me.
That's awful.
It's a really bad.
That's also an angle that you just kind of, even of your face, that you're just like,
totally.
No.
From way down low. Yeah. Anyway, I'm Jessie Katz. Working on it, joined by friend of the pod, filmmaker and musician Dara Golub.
Hello,
welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
Is this your second time on the
it
show?
It is.
Okay,
second time on this podcast.
That's right. Yeah, the billionth time together.
Yes.
In general, it's nice to have you back.
Thank you.
I feel like everyone's being very chill and not close enough to their mics today, so I'm just going to remind everyone to kiss that microphone. It's a rainy day, so we're all a little bit like hunched over. Yeah. Trying to protect ourselves.
It's cozy in here.
Yeah. And then the third voice in the room, we're very excited to have on the podcast today, Gabrielle Korn of Nylon, formerly known as Nylon Magazine, and now just Nylon. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I am a fan of yours for many reasons. You are an excellent tweeter.
Oh, thank you.
I thoroughly enjoy your feed. It's very relatable to me. And also the content that you oversee is amazing. So we're happy to have you in here and to pick your brain about all sorts of things.
Awesome.
But before we get to that, is everyone ready for a round of Float Your Boat?
Dara,
I'm going to make you do the sound effect.
Oh, yeah.
Float your boat.
Toot, toot.
And be in your bonnet.
Buzz, buzz, bitch.
Boom.
I really try to channel Alana. If you couldn't tell, I'm not trying to make it my own.
That was amazing.
Shout out.
No, I loved it. Thank you. Nailed it. Okay, so who has a boat they'd like to share?
We're just looking at each other.
I'll kick us off, okay? I'll get us warmed up here. I'll be your warm-up act. Okay, I think my boat. So I had a few. I think I'm going to go with a particular scene from this recent show called The Other Two. Have you guys seen it at all? So it's new on Comedy Central. It follows Broad City. So I think they're hoping it's going to be the next Broad City.
It is the way to get people to watch, for sure.
Yeah, they're passing the torch. It's Broad City's last season. So The Other Two is a comedy about the two older siblings of a young YouTube singing sensation. So this kid whose stage name is Chase Dreams has suddenly become like the next Justin Bieber. His older siblings, who are in their late 20s, I think 30-ish, live in New York, are both aspiring performers in their own right, but totally having no success. So now they're kind of floating around their little brother's orbit. So there was just a scene in the show that blew me the fuck away last week, which was the older brother. He's gay in the show, and he was going on a little date with another guy. They went to a pizza shop and they were just having a slice of pizza together. And the scene blew my mind because it is very explicit. Well, not explicit. It's implicitly about gay male sex in a way that I think probably went over the heads of 99.9% of the people watching, but they still fucking did it. And I'm like, right on. Like, someone in that decision-making room was like, I don't think anyone's going to understand what the scene is about.
But who cares?
But yeah, respect. Yeah. So these guys both have a piece of pizza in front of them, slice of pizza, and neither of them is touching it. And the guy's like, are you going to eat your pizza? And he was like, well, I didn't know what we're doing later. Like, maybe I shouldn't eat the pizza. And the other guy's like, yeah, that's, I didn't know either. So I wasn't going to eat the pizza. So what they're talking about is which one of them is going to bottom later. And then the one guy goes, well, like, if you don't care, I'd kind of like to eat the pizza.
And that's because it, like, just having that food in you is, makes it harder to bottom.
So I...
We don't have to go
like,
into
apologies
it, but
to
it's interesting.
The gay male community that I'm having to explain this at all. And I, honestly, I only kind of know about the intricacies of this because I heard about it on a podcast recently with a gay host who was getting into how challenging it can be to be a bottom, just in terms of you have to be really conscious of your diet, what you're putting into your body that day. And then sometimes there's enemas involved and a lot of like, you know, preparing for entry. And it's like a whole thing. And so anyway, the scene was about eating pizza, but it wasn't about eating pizza.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was it glossed over enough where like a viewer might be like, oh, they just don't want to feel like bloated and like.
Probably.
Like,
I guess
kind
that's
of like
how
a
you would interpret
hetero
it.
Hetero kind of relationship might go like the woman's like, oh, I don't want to eat the pizza.
Yeah. And then at the end, one of them is like, OK, I'll eat the pizza, but only this time. And the guy's like, OK, this time. So, yeah, cool. I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was great.
I love that.
Yeah. It was nice.
That actually dovetails nicely into my bee.
Okay. Which, boat.
Boat. Sorry. Buzz. Boat. Toot. Toot toot. bee sounds so happy, you know?
I know. No, angry bee. Happy boat.
Happy boat. Which is the show Dating Around on Netflix.
I have not seen it
yet. I don't know if anyone's seen it. And the reason I like it, there's a lot of reasons I like it, and I'll get to why your boat reminded me. Dating Around is, I'm very shamefully a fan of Bachelor, Bachelorette. And
is it even shameful anymore?
It's completely
everyone
shameful.
Watches it.
But
I'm ashamed that I don't watch it because
no.
I can't have a conversation
Same.
About
but
it.
But there's nothing redeeming about it.
Sure.
This is why it's shameful because when I watch it, I don't understand why I'm watching it. There's nothing that I get from it that makes me feel like I've watched something that's made me better.
Right.
And anyway,
okay.
Dating Around is exactly what I'm missing from The Bachelor and Bachelorette, which is actual conversations between interesting people. So The Bachelor is all about fantasy, meeting people in these crazy situations, going all over the place. They cut out every meaningful
Right.
interaction so that you get no substance, you get nothing about who these people are, what they're about.
Yeah, and it's probably
and
totally unrelatable.
It's like plastic.
Right.
Dating Around, they took six different types of people mm-hmm. in New York City and edited together five different blind dates. So each 30-minute episode, so easy to watch, each 30 minutes is five blind dates strung together.
Yeah.
And so it's just like the editing is really beautiful. You get to see how people interact,
yeah.
like what makes people who they are.
Do they match online or how are these
No, it's like producer.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. But each episode, so the first episode starts off, it's just like some straight normal dude, like Murray Hill type of thing. You're just like, okay, cool. uh-huh. Like I was hooked. I was like, okay, this is a little weird. Like everyone was super normal, you know, what you would imagine seeing on like MTV
Typical.
Or something. Yeah.
Let's not say normal.
Okay, right.
standard for television.
Let's say normative.
Yeah.
No, right. Okay. There right. we go. And then each episode subsequent to that gets more and more interesting
because it's different genders and sexualities.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So the second date is a Pakistani woman. Then you have a gay man, and then you have someone in his 70s, a widow. Like it's
cool.
just yeah. And then it ends with like this beautiful lesbian. It's like and all of the. It's just very. It's cool to watch people actually get to know each other and like repeating the things that they say. So the gay date, the gay man, was super interesting because on all of the even I think on the lesbian date, there's really not a lot of talk about like sex.
Uh-huh.
And on the gay date, it's like they're
Went
getting
right
into
it.
Bottom, top, you know, how much,
okay.
and just like, do we do this tonight? Like it was very interesting to see, you know, it's not unexpected, but it's an interesting contrast.
That's cool. Yeah. Do you find out if any of them lived happily ever after?
No, and I love that, because who gives a shit?
Right.
It's not about that.
Right.
You know, it's not about the goal. Like, they're supposed ostensibly they go on a second date. Whatever.
Sure.
Who cares?
Okay.
Yeah. But
cool.
It's just, like, cool to watch.
So dating around on Netflix?
Yes.
Okay. Noted.
It's so weird that you brought that up, because yesterday I had a meeting with Mila, who was the beautiful lesbian.
Gorgeous. Amazing.
Yeah.
Fierce. Amazing.
Oh, my God.
Lesbian.
I'm obsessed with her.
I know.
And I got all of the dirt. And it's really interesting to hear what was left out in the editing process.
Ooh.
And, like, it seems like they kind of made the lesbian episode, like, very identity focused, whereas, like, that definitely wasn't all they talked about.
That would have been way cooler if they hadn't, you know?
Like, totally.
It's cool that it's just cool in itself. You don't need that. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, like,
we're not
also a good opportunity to talk to people about that who aren't exposed to it. I don't know.
That's interesting, because they did clearly talk about whatever they talked about.
Right.
And so the editing, it's just so, the editing is my favorite part of, like, the behind the scenes of this stuff. It's just all there. It's all in the edit room.
Didn't you edit a dating show?
Not really.
Or you had something
to do with the dating show. Mock dating
show. Oh, right. It was like a satire, wait, so Gabrielle, is she, like, doing other entertainment things that she would have a meeting with you, or?
She is looking to.
Yeah.
And doesn't, you know, just wanted to talk to someone to see, like, where she could go from where she is. Because, you know, there aren't that many, like, visible lesbians
working
in, like, the pop culture media space. So,
so you've become one of the godmothers.
I always meet with them.
That's awesome. Okay, well, I want to ask you a lot more about that, but not yet. What's your boat?
Okay, so I embarrassingly binge watched all of Pen 15 over the weekend.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, my God. Okay.
What is it?
So
it's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu. It's about these two seventh grade girls, but they're played by two 31-year-old women who write the show. And it's really, really funny and really realistic. And it's like the fact that they're played by two adult women, but who are being completely serious is like, at first it's hilarious, and then it ends up being, like, really, really poignant, because it's, like, these middle school feelings, like, don't go away.
Yeah.
And, like, you, when you're watching it, it's, like, they're experiencing these, like, traumatic 12-year-old things that, like, stay with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, it's just so funny and amazing. And I was in seventh grade the year that it's about.
Oh, wow.
So
it really resonates.
All of the references, like, just hurt.
I heard there's a whole episode about AIM, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
In some
AIM, episode. And then there's a whole episode about, like, a pink thong.
Okay, I have to check it out.
Yeah, you have to.
Okay.
That was a big part of what Bo Burnham talked about his motivation for Eighth Grade, the movie.
Yeah.
Which is, like, these emotions never go away. Like,
totally.
We're all, as adults, we're all, like, living in middle school.
I'm glad you brought that up. I finally watched that movie for the first time, like,
so
2 weeks ago.
How good is that movie?
I kept meaning to bring it up on the podcast. Yes.
Brilliant.
Because she is so good. I mean, and the... So when I was in elementary school, I went to a public school that was, like, very diverse, and I was, like, cool. I had a lot of friends. Then I went to a private school that was very rich, not diverse at all. I had no friends. And it's, like, before the school year had even begun, this was sixth grade, I was invited to a girl's birthday party because the entire class was invited. So we went. It was at a roller rink, and I bought her a present. And what I bought her would have been really cool at my elementary school because it was, like, arts focused and anything, like, art related was cool. I bought her one of those, like, plastic puzzles that has, like, it's like a frame with all these little plastic pieces in it. And then you have to, like, rearrange them to make the picture. I don't know if you even remember these. Whatever. Basically a puzzle. And it was, like, of a Van Gogh picture. So we're at the fucking skating rink, and it's present time, and she's unwrapping all the presents, and it's nothing but gift cards, mostly to the record store. And then she gets to mine, and I, like, realize what was about to happen.
Oh,
and I
no.
had not established myself at the school. This was going to be the first thing that anyone knew about me, is what present did I buy for her? And it landed like a fucking rock.
God.
It was exactly like that scene in the movie.
You. That scene is
she
the
She just
most...
looked at it like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Oh,
and I was, like,
Jesus.
Looking around to see if anyone else understood why that was, like, a fun present. dead eyes from everybody.
The new girl.
Yeah.
Giving the artsy cool gift.
It was bad. I'm telling you, it was rough till I went to college.
Oh my God.
Because it was the same middle school and high school, so it's like I could never start over after that. That
was just way too cool is the problem. But that scene is the most heart-wrenching scene. Yeah. I mean, we've all been there in different forms, but, you know, walking into a pool party in a bathing suit that doesn't fit and knowing nobody, oh man.
Yeah. Yep.
Also, that movie's great.
That girl, in a really disturbing, sad way, reminded me of a girl that I dated a few years ago who was not in eighth grade, was like 10 years older than eighth grade, but carried around so much of those same insecurities. And there were so many things that girl would do. I was like, oh, wow. Now I understand so much better what was going on with her, that she just hadn't moved past some of these things.
Wow. It's about how we mask them.
Yeah, totally. But even down to the whole like Gucci thing she would do at the end of her videos, I was like, this girl that I dated. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. So that was all of our boats, right? Okay. B. Okay. My B is going to be really quick this week. I used to watch Game of Thrones. It was fun. When it premiered, Obama was president. The world seemed really optimistic and hopeful and like things weren't burning. And it was like fun to escape into a dark place. Now the world is a dark place, and I don't have any use for this show anymore. I stopped watching a couple seasons ago because it got way too rapey for me, and I was already like, I don't really need this. Now the final season is about to premiere, and I was like, shit, if I don't catch up and watch this with everyone, it's like the Bachelor thing. I'm going to be left out of conversation every day at work. Like, I should just fucking catch up. So I tried. Yeah. I can't. I can't. Yeah. It's not a world
a
I want to dwell in my brain. Like,
right.
And I live alone. I don't have like roommates to watch it with, which might make it more fun. Just to watch it by myself feels fucked up, and I don't want to.
I know
do
what
it,
you mean, but it's like the one like monoculture show that we have. Like everyone is going to.
Yeah, because that doesn't really exist anymore.
No.
But this is a relic
you can
from that
choose,
era.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a rough few months when that show comes back.
You could just Wikipedia. Yeah. You could just read all that and then just do it.
That's true. I'll just come in every Monday morning like, guys. Yeah. And then that'll just like be enough to set them off.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, I know. Yeah. Okay. Good plan. Thanks. What's your beat?
Same life where I'm like watching this alone and it bums me the fuck out, but all I do is watch it alone slowly because like I don't have all that much time. And then when I watch Leaving Neverland. It's just devastating, and I know we knew this, but we didn't know it in this way, and I just feel like I'm so beyond, like, done with him and everything that he is and, like, has given us. I really have not even begun to, like, understand how we're going to, like, live in a culture, like, without Michael Jackson, because, you know, you said your office, like, still plays it, and I'm horrified by that.
Yeah,
like,
this morning I went into the bathroom in my office, and they were blasting MJ, and
I'm
I was like,
horrified.
I think maybe they should probably take this out of the mix at this point.
I feel like if you watch it, I don't know if it maybe takes that, but if you, have you seen it?
I can't.
Yeah, it's like watching a train wreck. Talk about like watching dark shit. That's why I feel like Game of Thrones is like dark, but it's fantasy. Like there's so much dark reality right now.
Totally.
That's why I love Dating Around. It's like light and happy and like it's
every
just
every time you say Dating Around, I think for a second that you are actually dating around. So Dara got married last year.
Congrats.
So I know intellectually that's not true, but I get excited for a second. Like,
it's
oh
like
my
dating
gosh,
around.
She's dating around. This is great.
That's maybe that's why I like The Bachelor and Dating Around. Vicarious living.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, it's a bummer. Have you finished it? No, I finished part one finally.
Okay.
It's not a good bedtime show.
Yeah, Jesus, I know. It's not a good anytime show.
Good
when are you
going to
start your Sunday morning with that?
Yeah, so I feel you with the Game of Thrones.
Yeah. All right, Gabrielle.
Okay. I have been feeling really annoyed by all of the female scammer content recently. And I feel like for every like female scammer, there's probably like 1,000 men doing something so much worse. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that like pop culture is so fixated on these young women who have become successful based on lies, it's like we don't need more reason to be suspicious of successful women. Like it just feels so unnecessary and it just feels really reductive and I really hate it.
Yeah, there is an upsetting amount of satisfaction that people are getting from these stories. Yeah. Wait, so I'm forgetting her name. What's the newest one?
Elizabeth Holmes.
Right.
I watched that last night. And I watched it because I was curious what her voice sounded like, because that's what everyone was tweeting about. And like, yeah, it really sounds like this. But like, that's besides the point. The point is that she's this like young, attractive woman who failed really publicly because she wasn't willing to admit that what she was doing wasn't working. But I just kind of feel like, imagine being her and like, you're the only woman at the table. Mm-hmm. You've been told your whole life that this industry isn't for you. Like, yeah, you're going to lie until it's true.
Yeah.
Like, it just hurts.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about like women in the workplace who treat other women badly. And I like tend to think of that as the worst sin, but then I have to make myself remember why they act that way. And we're all victims of the same patriarchy. And like, I don't know. Sometimes I have a hard time understanding when my empathy should begin.
Totally.
For people. Yeah. But we don't remember the problem context.
That's one of the themes, I think, of what we're going through as a culture.
Yeah.
When does empathy begin? And
yeah.
Like, what's the obligation to not be empathetic for a minute and then turn it back on?
Totally.
It's hard, yeah.
I mean, so I mentioned this to you before we started recording today, but I just found out that a former colleague of mine who oversaw a very prominent Pride vertical of a publication was apparently sexually harassing artists who wanted coverage on the site.
Oh, my God.
And he would promise them coverage and in exchange for things. And if they didn't give it to him, he would take it back. And there's been an outpouring of people this week with screenshots of conversations. And it looks really bad. And partially, I think, because it's somebody that I know. I mean, first time. Horrified and disgusted, and it's just bad on so many levels, especially because it's a pride thing. It feels especially shitty.
Yeah.
But I do feel like, fuck, this person must have been in such a bad place where, like, he knows how risky that is.
Yeah.
And he still felt so lonely, small, whatever, that he was, like, trying to use these gears to elevate himself in this way. I don't know. So I have, like, I don't know if empathy is the right word. I just feel bad for everybody, mostly for the people that he was taking advantage of. 99.9% for them, but just that people end up in this place.
Like, for whatever reason drove him to be doing that?
Yeah. Rough.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Anyway, Gabrielle, I have a question for you. How did you treat International Women's Day in your company?
Like any other day.
Okay. Because every day is International Women's Day for you guys? Yeah.
Yeah. And also, it's like, it just becomes so pandering at a certain point. And like, I just didn't need us to jump on that bandwagon. And like, we were originally thinking of doing March as like a Women's History Month. But I just kind of felt like that's really boring. Like, let's do like a Women's Future Month. So we called it Women in Power. And we just tried to do like even more stories of strong, amazing women than we usually do. But like the reality is we always do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not selling something.
Right.
So the motivation to like create, I don't know, like fake enthusiasm around a day.
Right.
I don't know. I just didn't feel it.
It's that same balance of like, how much do you like push it out there as if it's not something that should be an everyday thing and celebrate it in this opportunity? Or are you like, but wait, this should just be a thing.
Yes,
all
exactly.
The time.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know.
And I saw a lot of gross lip service being paid to it by companies that don't reflect it in, you know, their hiring and their promotions. And
it's like, for this month, we'll do it.
Yeah. And I also, like, I watch a couple speeches by women who are hired to, like, pump up their staffs about it, and I don't think they were qualified. They didn't seem particularly progressive in their understanding of how things work. So, like, this one woman was talking about how you should never show your stress. And I wanted to be like, fuck that. This is the whole problem. Like, we should all be able to talk about our stress, our feelings, our whatever. Like, you're perpetuating this situation that is keeping us down.
Mm-hmm. That was like a feminist approach.
Well, like it was a
from that person's perspective.
It was a woman hired to speak to other women at a company. Yeah.
And that's, I think, very confusing to people who are trying to figure out what this all means to them, because because that attitude arguably could be also an approach. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think I'm with you that, like, no, feel the vulnerability, be your full self. Mm-hmm. But then I'm just curious. I always like to see the both sides. Like, I'm just, you know, it's interesting. Like,
yeah, I mean, I wish it had been more of like a talk back situation, but it was like a woman pacing a stage up and down and everyone just kind of like listening. It also bothered me that she was a white woman talking about this and never acknowledged how it's so much harder even for women of color in an office to advance. I mean, to not even acknowledge that was also making me crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, let's talk about... More specifically, what you have going on. So let's start like this. I used to work in fashion. I worked in the corporate office for a big brand. And so most of the people that I worked with were women or gay men. But there was still it was not a great environment to be a woman in. And this is another example of the kind of like, where do you have empathy and where do you think about a larger context for people? Because there was a lot of women not treating other women great in the office, but they also seemed pretty miserable themselves. And this is kind of part of the reason why I wanted to get out of fashion. It seemed to have this very weird runway into being in your 30s and feeling like personally unfulfilled and having like kind of malicious relationships with other women. Mm. And I wonder where a lot of that begins. I mean, you know, fashion is like, it's an industry that has historically been led by women. But there still is this kind of like toxic misogyny that exists in it. And like, where is it coming? So now I'm like thinking when you're coming in here, okay, well, how do we talk about the female gaze in media and fashion and style in this whole industry? And what does it mean exactly? And what are we even talking about? Like, what does the female gaze look like if we're talking about what we're actually wearing, what's on trend, what style is? That's a very complicated thing, which I do want to talk to you about. And then the other part of it is, what does the female gaze look like when you're talking about magazines and covers and what stories you're selecting and what we're teaching women through all of that? So
just little ideas.
Just an easy question.
Yeah, that's my little preamble. Okay, so first I would like to ask you, what is your feeling about like fashion and where it's moving right? And by the way, I know Nylon is not just a fashion publication. You guys tackle everything. So we'll get to that. But just on its surface, do you feel like there's an evolution in fashion right now that is on trend with this idea of gender parity that everyone seems to be talking about? And what does that even look like? I mean, we could talk about high heels, for example, right? A lot of people think they're oppressive. A lot of women also really feel good wearing them. So I don't even know, like, for fashion to be progressing, what that means, unless it's just to say people should have more options to do what feels good for them. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's so, so complicated. And I think in your very beautiful preamble to this conversation, you touched on a lot of things that I've been thinking a lot about, which is the fact that fashion is for women's fashion is for women. It's largely created by women, but it has historically not really served women. Mm-hmm. And it's done a terrible job with representation, with body diversity, and with like sustainability. Like in so many ways, fashion has been like a really bad thing. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening in the industry is what's happening across industries, which is the younger generation of people who have been brought up to believe that they should have equality are saying like, this is bad, this is wrong, we need to make things better. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed is that our readers in particular don't want to support fast fashion. They love stories about brands being problematic because then they can know who to not give their money to. Mm.
Wait, what does fast fashion mean?
Fast fashion means like mass-produced, low-quality clothes that are really cheap. So like Forever 21, right. H&M, right. The things that like you wear a couple times.
That you want to go to because it's easy and
because
cheap.
Because it's easy and cheap. And it's like, you know.
And then you need to buy more of it very soon.
Because it falls apart and it's also like sweatshop labor and, you know, like plastic that'll be around longer than you will. These things that are becoming harder and harder to justify when we know what their effect is on the world and on people.
Interesting.
I think people really want to be educated about where they're spending their money.
Okay.
And at the same time, I think social media plays a huge role in where fashion is going because there's been, you know, the democratization of fashion, which is influencers and bloggers, which means like people competing with brands and people acting as advertisers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't have to be a Vogue editor to have a million followers and whatever, whatever. So there's part of me that's like, this is so punk rock. Like, I love that, like, the playing field is level. And then there's the other part of me that's like, okay, well, think about, like, who you're letting influence you and what they know and what they look like. And, you know, it's disturbing to me to see how many of the most famous influencers and bloggers just look like the models do. And I had hoped that once people had more control over the images they put into the world, that you would see more kinds of bodies and ages and races. But it's like once we have that control, people are face-tuning themselves, you know, instead of like letting magazines Photoshop them.
Right.
So I feel like there's so much work to be done through fashion.
Yeah. Wow. So maybe the evolution has more to do with the process of what's being made than the actual look of it.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, the look of it is interesting to track because, you know, there was that conversation a few months ago about whether or not low-rise pants were coming back. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everybody on the internet was like, no, we are not doing this. And like, I really loved that because I felt like, okay, this is like an example of like social media feedback in real time to trends. Like people no longer think that like trends just come out of nowhere. Like we can kind of track it and predict when it's coming and opt in or opt out.
So where does it come from if not? So it comes from the design, like the high up designers, and then the internet's like, no, as opposed to, because I feel like now trends could also come from the internet and the influencers.
And I think they do. And I think that's where this like early aughts revival is coming from. Because I think it's like these like high school kids and college kids like performing nostalgia for an era they never experienced.
Totally disturbing. Who's more powerful now, a supermodel or an influencer?
I mean, I think the supermodel as influencer.
It's like one of this. And it, also your brand is also like, I mean, how do you even distinguish like from a person who is an influencer from a brand who's an, I mean, it's all, it's just, you know?
I know.
It's so hard. It's so hard.
It's so hard. And it's also like our audience like doesn't like the word influencer. Like they care about people who happen to have big followings because of the cool work they're doing. So
it's a matter of semantics though.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
When you go to Fashion Week and you watch the runway shows, are there things that you see where you're like, I think that this is detrimental to women?
Oh my God, yes.
Like, what kind of thing would be an example of that?
So, I feel like body diversity in Fashion Week is like the final frontier, and it drives me insane that nobody does anything about it. And it's like you'll go to shows with 50 models and they will all be like clinically underweight teenagers, and they'll be wearing a t-shirt that says girl power, and everyone will take a picture of it and say like, that's so amazing, and like no one is calling them out. And it's like certain designers get away with it because certain editors love them. And it's really hard for me to sit through, and I feel I feel really complicit. And like I do the most that I can to like call it out, to not feature designers who don't have extended sizing, to not give any press to designers who don't like hire Black women, because like that is still happening. But, you know, I'm just one woman.
Sure.
Ultimately, like I can't change an entire industry. And I feel like people just excuse bad behavior if they like the work in, you know, in music, in beauty, in fashion, too. And it's it's really hard. And it's like, you know, we're all just trying to figure out how to feel OK in our bodies. And it's starting to feel really traumatic to me to just be constantly surrounded by like glorified anorexia.
Totally.
And like, the fact that people aren't talking about that as the serious issue it is, it's like we've moved past it to bigger things. But like people die of anorexia. And like these girls are like really, really young and hungry.
Yeah.
And I hate it so much.
God, when I used to see model castings at my office when I worked for this company, I mean, these girls were so young. They were like over 6 feet tall. So incredibly thin. Looked like they're just trying to like stay on their feet while they're waiting in line to go in. Like it's crazy. And also, you know, this is so fucked up. It used to be a thing in my office that women who worked for the company would sometimes just pass out in the hallways.
Yeah.
Because people had real eating disorders. And it's something that would be laughed about in the office. Like, oh my God, did you see so-and-so just totally fucking fell face first over by the bathroom? And then, like, gossip about their eating disorder. But that was just par for the course.
Totally.
And has that really changed, do you think?
I mean, I...
And we know we're not supposed to laugh about it, but...
Yeah, it's like, at this point, I feel like the people who think and talk like that have left my office. And it's like a new wave of people who are definitely not like that. But that's also because I hired all of them. And you know, as someone who has recovered from an eating disorder, like I'm hyper aware of the energies that I'm bringing in. And but I mean, I went to a presentation recently where a model passed out and no one said anything.
Wow.
And they just kind of like removed her and then like went on. This was like a month ago. You know, it's like on the one hand, I want to say we've made so much progress. And on the other hand, I'm just like, do models not count? Like who? They're women.
Right.
They're not clothes hangers.
Totally.
I was watching The Office the other day, one of my favorite shows. And like the number of like fat jokes that they're making.
Yeah.
Like to not, to us, for us not to have been sensitized to stuff like that as recent as like 2011, you know. It's crazy because now I feel like I see that and I'm just like, oh, God, you know, but like they weren't doing something that was, oh, God, at the time.
Right.
But like now our radars are up for it's great that it's across all of these different things.
Yeah.
You don't
wonder. It reminds me once we were like preparing the showroom for Anna Wintour to come look at a new collection. And it was like an hour and a half before she was supposed to be there. And so the models were hanging out in the showroom all eating breakfast. It was like all these little croissants and stuff. And she showed up early because she does. She walked off the elevator super early. No one was ready for her. And the look on their face, which I understand. I mean, it's a look on anyone's face. If Anna Wintour walks into the room, you're not expecting it. But it's like to have been caught by her eating a pastry. And then everyone just poof. Like I've never seen people leave a room so fast, like ran away. And it was super awkward because then she was just standing there. There was no one to talk to her. But it's like, God forbid she see behind the curtain that people were eating. It was crazy. No, but this is interesting because I feel like I was thinking about the female gaze in fashion as kind of like a two-dimensional thing, and you've just opened it up for me that it's a lot more about the process and the intention and the equality of it. It has much less to do with what it actually is.
Totally.
Yeah, but just how it's made and who it's made for.
Exactly.
So can you tell us then how you came to nylon and what your mission was going in? Because I assume that you had a mission in mind, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I started at Nylon about 5 years ago.
And when it was still a print magazine also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And I had been the beauty editor at Refinery 29 before then. And at Refinery, my mission had been like very representation focused. I started there in... oh, God, like 2012, 2013. And they were a very different place. And I was the only queer person that I saw. You know, so I really took it upon myself to start writing about beauty from like a lesbian perspective.
Which means what exactly?
Which means that identity plays a big part in it, and that you know, there's makeup that's not for a man, and that there's grooming decisions you can make for yourself and not because that's like the normalized thing to do.
Okay, so, wait, can we talk about this for a second?
Yeah.
I think this is so fascinating, the makeup thing.
Yeah.
Our regular co-host, Alana, also, she's queer. She wears a lot of makeup and it's beautiful, but it's so interesting because men and women alike assume that she's doing that as a presentation for men.
Right.
And it's this constant confusion that she would do that and not want to try to fuck men.
Mm-hmm.
And
as opposed to, but like doing it for other women or doing it for yourself?
For yourself, I think.
Yeah. Right.
But like
for yourself.
Did you mean for a man or for another person?
Well, I think we never, it would never occur to us that a woman would do it for other women. Uh-huh. Which is another thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But I do sometimes wonder, like, okay, if we lived in a vacuum or a matriarchy or whatever, what would we lose? Would women still want to wear a lot of makeup or heels or whatever, all the things? Or did all of that originally stem from wanting to please men?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is that, like, women objectify each other.
Yeah.
And there's a way to do that that's, like, consensual and respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think if someone likes makeup because it makes them feel pretty, you know, like, that's a totally different thing.
Right.
But what I was kind of talking about specifically at Refinery was that the things you're told you have to do as a woman, like, that is not all that beauty is. Everyone has a beauty routine, whether it's doing nothing or doing the most.
Right.
So this all started when I wrote a personal essay about not shaving your legs. And now they're like bodyhair.com. But at the time, it was like, ew.
Yeah.
You wrote what? But it was really successful. And I wrote about like the idea of queer signifiers and, you know, having those signifiers through your beauty routine, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of opened up from there. And I just worked really hard to just improve the representation and to use beauty as a window to talk about things that connect women rather than that separate them.
Yeah.
And
were you always out at work?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I came out when I was 19.
Okay. Got it.
And before I was at Refinery, I was freelance writing. And one of the things I was doing was a column for Autostraddle.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who hired me at Refinery knew my writing from that.
Cool.
So
it served you well.
It did. Yeah. They wanted a diverse hire.
Yeah.
And, you know.
You gave it to
Refinery's
them.
Refinery's a dope company.
Yeah. They're cool. But I mean, you know, 7 years ago, people weren't thinking about beauty and fashion as ways to talk about identity.
Totally.
It was very new. Like, the feminist internet was very new.
Right.
So the crossover between women's media and feminist media had, like, just started percolating. So, like, there were a few of us who were talking about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
And then...
So then I went to Nylon.
Uh-huh.
And I had gotten...
As what? What was your first position?
Senior editor.
Okay.
I had gotten really sick of beauty.
Uh-huh. Just ran out of angles.
To you.
Yeah. I was like... Yeah. Because I think beauty editors, you have to ultimately, like, love beauty.
Right.
And I was like, I'm going to dismantle beauty.
Right.
And that's so exhausting.
Yeah.
Because, like, you still have to go to, like, the mascara launch event, you know, even though you're like, this is oppressive. Like, you're still there at, like, 8:00 on a Wednesday. So... Anyway, I went to Nylon as a senior editor, and the biggest part of my job was figuring out how to create a digital presence for them, because the website had existed largely to serve the magazine, and they had this huge social media presence, and they just weren't creating that much original content for that audience.
Mm-hmm.
So there was really nothing in place. There wasn't even, like, a weekly meeting.
Okay.
So... in a lot of ways, it was low-hanging fruit, and in a lot of other ways, it was like the Wild West,
right,
because no one had tried to do it in a really serious way. And so there was one person above me and a couple of assistants, and we kind of built it out from there. And, you know, it was things like creating an editorial calendar and hiring a top editor, you know, but also really figuring out what Nylon Magazine meant to a digital audience that was different.
Yeah.
And
so that was up to you to kind of contribute to that vision?
Yes.
Was anything being dictated to you about that?
No.
Well, what is/was Nylon's mission or vision?
So Nylon's mission was to be an alternative glossy magazine to the more mainstream options. So it was the bridge between indie and commercial worlds. It was the option for the cool, edgy indie girl who loved fashion and beauty and music, but was like too cool to pick up Marie Claire.
Mm-hmm. Like Lily Allen, basically.
Right? Yeah, totally. But there were a lot of problems with Nylon the magazine. Number one being race. Like, I'm writing a book, so I recently went through all of the past Nylon magazines to like figure out what the actual percentage was, and it's like,
oh wow,
it was founded in 1999, and they didn't have a woman of color on the cover until 2003, and then it was like one every few years from there, and it's just like, you know, you can't do that, like it's ridiculous. So I really tried to prioritize diversity within everything we did online, and diversity in all of its many forms. And then eventually the digital director left and I replaced her. And we had had some differences in opinion about what digital content should be. And she was an entertainment editor. And so she was really good at driving traffic through celebrity news. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that's not what Nylon should be. Mm-hmm. Like, people can go anywhere else for that. We need to do like quality original features. Mm-hmm. So
it sounds harder.
It's so much harder, but it's so much more rewarding. Mm-hmm. There was like a scary 3 months where traffic dropped and then it came back, and I got to hire people who were interested in doing magazine quality journalism online. And basically, yeah, I mean, yeah, so we did that. And then the magazine folded in September 2017 and I became the editor in chief. And at that point, I had the option to look at the total editorial strategy and figure out what I wanted to take from the magazine and what needed to be left in the past. And
what did
my
you
God,
take?
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, so I took the idea of covers, mm-hmm. and I took the core brand DNA of being really cool.
Yeah.
And other than that, I felt like so much of it just wasn't really relevant anymore. Like, mm-hmm. the aesthetic was relevant, but in a lot of ways it wasn't, because I feel like they really tied the idea of coolness to this like thin white indie body.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not what's cool anymore. Like, not only is it not morally right, it's like, it's just so backwards.
Out of sync.
Yeah. So, and it was also things that we did online that were really successful that they never touched in print, like politics and mm-hmm. wellness mm-hmm. and sex. I always like ended up, you know, in arguments with the print editors about doing sex in the magazine. And that like did really well online for us. So we kept doing it. So I created a new vertical called Life for all of that content. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at all of the monthly themes. And that was really fun because the monthly themes were like very apolitical. It was like the denim issue. And like, why have a denim issue when you can do Black History Month?
Right.
You know? So I changed pretty much all of the themes to make them reflect what I really cared about. And then ultimately, like, the core of my strategy is to get rid of this idea of there being a singular reader. And that's like marketing lingo that you'll hear across editorial platforms, which is this question, who's your reader? And I don't think anyone should have their reader be one person.
They try to boil it down. That's like a standard.
Yes. They try to
singular reader.
They try to boil it down so that they can target them specifically.
And not readers.
Right.
You know?
So that they can go to
advertisers.
Right. Yeah. It's an advertiser thing. So I changed it to like, who are they in terms of like gender neutral, but also in terms of like a plurality of identities. Yeah. And instead of having like a demographic that we speak to, it's a value set. And the value set is being like aware and into intersectional feminism, being actively anti-racist, being queer encompassing, which is different than being like LGBT friendly. It's just like we encompass these things. Mm-hmm. And then basically, if the music we're covering doesn't speak to you because you don't like it, like, that's fine, go somewhere else. But if it doesn't speak to you because you don't see yourself represented in the coverage, that's a problem.
Yeah. I dig it.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, the idea of like a cover for a digital brand that doesn't exist in print, but your covers are fucking awesome. I was clicking through the Lena Waithe one because she's your cover star this month. And it's amazing because the photos are moving, you know? They're video clips that repeat. And you still get the same great profile and everything's there. And who the fuck would read it in print anyway? Unless you're at the airport. But even then, I don't buy magazines anymore.
It's so interesting to watch how successful the digital covers have been. Yeah. Like, the engagement statistic is, like, so wild. So the print covers, the average time spent reading them was like a minute and a half. Uh-huh. And once we started doing digital covers, it shot to 14 minutes.
Wow.
Like, people are really reading the story and spending time on the page, on their phones usually.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think it's because the people I'm picking, they have like a larger mission to speak to. Like, yeah, they're cool. Yeah, they're attractive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have like a relevant project coming out. But it has to be more than that. They have to have a mission. They have to want to talk about, like, larger issues of, like, identity and politics.
Totally. Good for you. Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, I've worked at a few media companies who have been around for a long time and still struggle to articulate what their brand is or what their vision is. You know, it's still kind of a catch-all, and it's constantly moving to chase whatever we've decided is the key demographic that's going to be the most engaged on social or on Facebook, or, you know, these targets are constantly moving. And if you don't have any internal integrity about what's actually important to you, you're never going to win that race.
Oh, totally. And also, like, Nylon is never going to be a publication that gets 20 million uniques a month. Like, that's just, that doesn't make sense for us. Yeah. Like, for us to be successful, we need to double down on who we are and have a really strong brand identity rather than trying to be everything to everyone, which is like a totally valid mission. And I like really respect the brands that are trying to do that because like there is a place for that. But like, that's not what Nylon is.
Right. I think, God, I was in a doctor's office last year and they had women's magazines out and I didn't have my phone on me. So I was like, all right, let's do it. Let's see what these are like these days. And it was all the same shit. And it reminded me of how when I was in high school, like, I used to be really self-conscious about my thighs. I was such a fucking rail in high school. I shouldn't have had any kind of fears that I was overweight or too big on any part of my body. And I know that I got it from these magazines, like I got YM and all that shit.
Of course.
And every other article was telling you how to lose weight from a certain part of your body. And a lot of them haven't come that far from there. And I started to get really enraged thinking about how it's still destroying lives.
Like, or if they have toxic. Like the writer is like tone deaf and like trying to address it or be correct in a way that like makes you feel just cringy.
Yeah. I know. There's such a weird disconnect between print content and digital content. And I feel like so many magazines still rely on this idea that they have to tell women that there's something wrong with them in order to incentivize you to read and buy.
Totally.
It's like, that's the model. Like, your appearance is a problem and we will tell you how to solve it.
Right. Well, what's going to grab you to spend now, like, what is it, like $7 for like a magazine?
Oh, it's got to be like $14.99 or something.
Like, right. Yeah. So like what you have to say, like, I need to read that or my life will be, you know, I'll be worse off.
Yeah, totally.
Because also, you can read all the gossip on, you know, everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you've already read it on Twitter before you can find a magazine. Also, the sex articles are awful and are so, like, shaming. Like, you must not know how to have sex because your boyfriend left you. And, of course, it's always your boyfriend. So that's also extremely, extremely toxic.
Yeah, and you know what's so interesting about that? I was talking to the former editor-in-chief of Seventeen magazine, who was editing Seventeen when I was reading it in middle school. And we were talking about how in, like, the Bush era, abstinence-only education was, like, very much top of mind. And so anytime they talked about birth control, the last sentence of every article had to be, but abstinence is the only sure way.
Wow.
And it was like, she said that and I was like, yeah, you did do that.
Yeah, totally.
And then I felt really jealous that other teenagers get to grow up without that conclusion to everything.
Right.
Well, when you're looking at how things are now with Nylon, do you look ahead and say, try to predict, like, what's my blind spot now? Like, because clearly we're not at this point, like, all-knowing, all-evolved. Mm-hmm. But it's hard because we want to be and we like are aspiring to be. But we know that in 20 years, like the next generation is going to be like, what the fuck were they thinking?
Totally,
you know?
Totally.
Yeah. Like, do you have either bigger goals, like long term goals, or just like ways that you're like, you know what? Let me just like make sure that like places you look and be careful and wonder and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I try to hire people who are really different than me so right. that we can cover as many perspectives internally as possible, because like that's who catches those things.
Right. Totally.
Like things that you wouldn't think are offensive, like that could get published unless someone, you know, belongs to that group of people that you're talking yeah. about and sees it beforehand.
Yeah.
It's so important to have diverse hiring. And that way, like the diversity is not a prop. It's a value.
Yeah, it makes the business better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do like lay awake at night and wonder what I'm doing wrong. Because
sure.
nobody,
well, that's probably
nobody's
a sign
perfect.
Of good character.
Yeah.
You're pretty young and you've really seemed to nailed how this business is moving and you're handling it very well. Do you ever have imposter syndrome? Do you ever feel like, what the fuck am I doing? I am not qualified to be an editor in chief of a major brand.
Literally every day. I mean, so I am going to be 30 in a month.
Uh-huh.
And I became editor-in-chief when I was 28.
Wow.
And the hardest part of that was telling other people.
Mm.
Because, you know, if it was someone who hadn't heard of Nylon, they would be like, oh, that's cute. Like, did you start that in college? Oof. Or, you know, if it was people who do know about Nylon, they're like, what?
Right.
Like, really? And they, like, kind of don't believe you.
Yeah.
And when I took this job, there wasn't, like, a big announcement about it because the magazine had been folded mm-hmm. and 12 people lost their jobs. And I made the decision that I didn't want to, like, have a PR campaign about my promotion because it just felt really tacky.
Cool.
But, like, the flip side of that was that no one knew I had this job.
Right. Which, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. But also, like, it made it hard at first to, like, you know, because I need publicists to write me back. Like,
yep.
I do need invitations to things. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, so it was like a
right.
it was like a DIY, like, word of mouth campaign that I took upon myself.
Yeah.
But I mean, so there's that. But there's also, because I've been at Nylon for so long, every process that exists, every hire that's in place, every job I created, you know, like there's nothing that I didn't edit in terms of edit, social, video and art.
Mm-hmm.
All of those jobs I created. So in that way, I don't feel like an imposter. I feel like a mother.
Yeah.
Like it very much feels like mine. I feel like no one knows the ins and outs of all of those departments better than me because I birthed them.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, sometimes there are like tough situations as a manager that I feel like I would need like a degree in social work to mm-hmm. handle.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's when I feel like an imposter, like when there are really tough personnel issues that I'm like, okay, if I had 25 years of experience, how
right.
would I handle
sure.
this?
Right.
You know, like if I was a trained clinician, what would I say to you?
Yeah, this is one of the things that holds back my ambition in the workplace is all the things that come with being successful professionally. It's all the shit that it's not why you got into the business.
Right.
But you have to be responsible for it now and you're just going to have to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And it's important that yeah. you do it and at least like you have good intentions as opposed to other people who might not handle it so well. So
yeah, totally. And the other thing is I've been getting really mad recently about like the way young successful men are treated versus the way young successful women are treated. Mm. And it's like I just feel like we're set up to fail. Like the anti-aging industry is like a multi-billion dollar industry. Like we are told for our whole lives that looking young is like the goal. Mm-hmm. But then like if you look young or if you are young, you're treated like you don't know anything and
totally.
Everyone is suspicious of you. Meanwhile, if you are like a young successful man, like you're a trailblazer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You are like a young titan of industry. No one's asking you about your imposter syndrome. They're asking yeah. you about like the house you're going to buy.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just I just feel when I'm like out in the world and people are like reacting to my age in real time in the industry, my first thought is like, if I were a man, would this be happening? Mm.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking to my therapist about that kind of thing this week. She seemed to think I was focusing too much on gender differences. And at a certain point, we got into a not all men debate. And then I was like, okay, can we just get back to talking about me? Because I don't think we should wade into this territory.
Oh my God.
I'm going to have to fire
it's
you.
Like, I think about this a lot. Do
yeah.
you want to get into this right now?
I mean, I was like, no, I understand what you're saying, but like we also do live in a patriarchy, so certain things are just what they are. Yes. So I think we should acknowledge that. But I understand it's more about like me and what this is bringing up for me. Okay, let's focus on that.
Yeah, totally. My therapist is like, I think secretly like a very like strong feminist, like probably was an activist at some point because like she doesn't really say much when I like go on rants about like how much I hate men. But then recently I was just like, I just don't know what to do. Like, I feel so frustrated. And she was like, you just have to keep fighting.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, sister.
Yeah.
That's
I know.
Amazing. Wow. Mine was like, do you have any good relationships with men? I was like, yes, I have male friends. Okay. It's not what this is about. Yeah.
Some of my best friends are men.
Yeah, exactly. Not all men. I get it. Wait, so what is this book that you're writing?
So it's called Everybody Else is Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And
how we always feel.
Yeah.
Social media. Thank
so
you.
Good. Exactly. Yeah. And it's about like very much what we're talking about, which is like this moment in time where women's media is like doing this whole like performatively woke thing. But the issues that women face in terms of like equality and our eating disorders, like that's not getting better. So it's personal essays. About like the experience of being a woman with a body like who's part of this movement but also like has always kind of felt like an outsider too. And trying to figure out like why we've gotten so good at building other women up without turning that inward. And you know, so in the title, else is in parentheses because it's like, you know, we're always saying to each other, like, you're so perfect. You're so perfect. But like, we're not looking at ourselves in the mirror and saying, like, you're perfect.
Yeah, we're not part of the everybody.
Yeah, yeah, we're saying, like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
So it's coming out next summer.
Amazing.
It's love it. My first draft is due in June.
I've crunched that.
Yeah, I'm like writing it on the subway because that's my free time.
Yeah. Do you enjoy having like a place where all of these ideas need to go as opposed to like, I just have an idea and then, you know, it can go wherever. But
yeah,
now you have to put it down. And so
yeah, it's nice because it's like the stuff that I've been thinking about for the past 10 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And it's like I kind of feel like this is the reason why I've like worked in this space is to like say this about it, because like I'm working too hard in an industry that doesn't feel like something I organically wanted for it to just like be purposeless. Like I need to point out that these things are happening.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thank
okay,
you.
Before we let you go, will you do a quick round of the hot takes wheel with us?
Oh, yes. Okay. What's that?
It's a wheel.
Forgot about this.
It's a rickety, shitty wheel from Amazon. So we have acquired some questions, some hot take topics from listeners that we've written on this wheel. So I'm going to ask you to spin it. And then whatever we land on, we all have to go around and give our hot take.
Okay.
And the definition of a hot take is something that no one can hold you accountable to later.
Like
all right.
That.
Spin it hard.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
What do we get?
Oh, I think we're on reverse sexism and racism. Does it exist?
Fuck.
Yeah. I think about that all
Me
the time.
Me too.
Anyone? Gabrielle?
No, it doesn't.
Does not exist? Why?
Because that is not what sexism and racism means. And if you are in a privileged class of people, then institutionally you cannot be discriminated against. And really, I think what people are talking about when they talk about reverse sexism and racism is equality, because equality only feels like a threat if you are privileged.
A
period.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's you said it.
Yes, I agree, and yep. I would not have put it
nope,
so well.
Not at all.
And
love it.
That nailed it. Okay, all agree.
Not going to think about that anymore. Now I know.
Yeah, now you have your answer. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
One less thing to keep us up at night.
Thank you to my women's studies degree.
Wow, look at that.
I wanted to ask you what your background woman said.
Yeah, well, it was like queer and feminist theory because I went to an individualized study school and I just call it women's studies because that's easier than explaining that.
Dope. Okay, Gabrielle, people who want to read your awesome Twitter feed, what is your handle?
Oh my God, what is my handle? It's Gabrielle, GABRIELLE _ KORN.
Awesome. And I assume you'll keep us updated on your book launch and all those things. Anything else on the horizon for you, or just keeping Nylon pushing us forward?
Yeah. If you like what Nylon is doing, the best way to support it is by sharing our stories.
Okay.
So I always appreciate when I see that.
There you go. Dara, where can people follow you?
Oh, well, you won't find much new content all the time. I've had a, I mean, my feelings and engagement for social media have gone through such an evolution, and now
you
find
have severe
it,
ebbs and flows.
Well, it's really been an ebb. Is that the lack?
You'll have like a night that's a flow.
Yeah. Or you say to me, hey, and I'm like, fine. But I find that now, not to get into this, but just that I find now I go on these things only for shopping and things that I need to learn, not about like engagement with people.
Go on what? Social media platforms? Uh-huh. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, well, because it's just bad. I don't have a good feelings about it. It makes me feel bad in all ways. So I go on when I want to look at like decor, like home decor.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's totally. Like, my primary reason for going on Instagram.
But even that feels bad.
Everything feels bad. Because
everything can make you feel bad.
Yeah, everything makes me feel bad. So I try to stay off social media. However, if you are interested, it's at TNYLS.
Which stands for
The New York Love Songs, which is my documentary over 10 years in progress. Follow me for more.
Beautiful. And we are at Female Gaze Pod, and I am at JKatz on Twitter. Thanks for listening, guys. Thank you, Gabrielle, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
I could talk to you for another 10 hours, and maybe you can come back sometime.
I would love that.
I feel like this was just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. Okay, sweet. Thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.